This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. It's time once again for Reality Review Wednesday. Please subscribe so you can have this delivered right into your inbox, your iTunes, your whatever, every single week. And we're going to be doing this three times a week. We should get in three podcasts this week. Starting up next week, the first week of the NFL regular season, we're going to go ahead and have three episodes, likely Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, or possibly Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. Not quite nailed down on that yet. But go ahead and subscribe. If you want to leave a five-star review, that would be absolutely awesome. And I really appreciate you guys who have written notes. It makes my heart feel really, really nice. And I appreciate all of you. If you have any suggestions for what reality sports show you want Sean and I to start in on next, please email me at seth@deceptivelyfast.com. That's the quickest way to get my attention regarding this podcast, seth@deceptivelyfast.com. I know that Amazon usually does a series in season. I think the Cowboys might have something. Just let me know. Whatever you're into, whatever you're interested in, we're going to check out that Last Chance U also. We might binge watch that and go through that episode by episode so you guys could watch along on Netflix if that's what you're into. But without further ado, Sean Pendergast. And hopefully by next week I'll have some little down and some music, and then it'll fade into Sean. Sean Pendergast, we're coming to the close of both very cavalier. We saw the season finale, but the one that I think most of our listeners actually give a damn about, Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like you and I are doing the very cavalier portion just for the two of us.
I hope there's not a season two.
Did you see the end?
They leave a little bit of a cliffhanger.
She basically says season two is going to be so much fun.
Yeah, she says that. I think that's the power of positive thinking in mind.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess the ratings were good. I have no idea.
I mean, unless they're going to build it around Jay Cutler, I don't know that we're going to be doing a very cavalier pod again.
I had an interesting conversation with our producer today, the producer for my radio show, Chris Jones, where Chris Jones said that he thinks this is a horrible Hard Knocks and he has a hard time even making it through each episode.
Really?
I feel like this is one of the best Hard Knocks.
I feel like not only is this one of the best Hard Knocks, but I feel like some of the most vocal critics of Hard Knocks that I know really like this season so far.
I wonder if Chris is a little bit just – maybe he's angry that Michael Kendricks last night was given a scouting report in sometimes brutal fashion of the Eagles, and Chris Jones is an Eagles fan.
Yeah.
But I don't – Chris – Michael Kendricks ends up today being indicted, or at least he divulged that he's being indicted for – is it racketeering?
Insider trading. Yeah, I have the statement in front of me.
So last night, Michael Kendricks gets up, delivers his scouting report in front of the team. It was kind of interesting, but I also kind of wondered, why is Michael Kendricks all of a sudden being highlighted on this episode of Hard Knocks? And I wonder if this had anything to do with it.
Well, I don't know. I can't imagine that the producers knew about this. This sounds like something we're all just finding out about right now, but it's been an ongoing investigation.
Yeah, and for the producers to know, they would have had to make the decision several days ago, and I suppose it was interesting enough to watch. It was just kind of strange.
Yeah, I think it was just a happy accident, Seth, if you want to know the truth. And we'll get to the insider trading part in just a second. I can't believe I'm saying that sentence on a podcast.
For 12 hours
after the episode just ended about a football player being involved in insider trading. But that scene unto itself, Michael Kendricks, who was an Eagle last year, he won a Super Bowl in Philadelphia. He got cut for salary cap reasons. He signs with the Browns. And we've always heard about this type of stuff going on, but we hear about it kind of tongue-in-cheek with Belichick, like signing guys who get waived by whoever they play in week one to basically sequester them and interrogate them. And people make it sound like he's hitting them in the face with a phone book. Tell me more about their offense. But I'm assuming, have you sat in a meeting room before where someone gets up in front of everybody and gives away all the trade secrets of the team they're about to play?
Not where they get up and give a formal presentation.
He was like giddy about doing it. That was what jumped out at me. That's what makes this whole insider trading thing today so hilarious, because even before that came out today, my first thought in watching that last night is like, wow, he is really anxious to give away everything about the Eagles. You're right. He's up there with like a laser pointer.
I think that now it happens. It just happens in a more informal fashion.
Right.
You're going to definitely tell guys, like, okay, this is how you rush this guy. This is what they're good at. If you know any of the line calls or anything, totally, 100%, you're going to do that. And like offensive line coaches, the smart ones at least know they got to change up some of their calls and use dummy calls and everything, because the defensive linemen and the linebackers all know them. And teams have gotten more adept at that. So the formal presentation part of it was different. I hadn't seen that before. But in terms of like the actual insider trading of giving up your former team, that's par for the course.
That happens all the time. It just was, to me, it was funny. I know that happens all the time. But the fact that last night as I'm watching it, I'm like, wow, he seems really happy to be giving up all this information. And then of like all things, 12 hours later, there's an investigation into him insider trading, and he's apologizing for it. It happened 4 years ago, I guess.
Says that he was led astray by a Harvard buddy of his.
Yeah.
Harvard.
Which ironically, my daughter is driving back to Harvard today.
Right, learning the ways. Apparently, that's what they do at Harvard.
Apparently.
All you Harvard folk.
I need to be careful now when she goes to ask me. A lot of times, like midway through the semester, Dad, I'm out of money. Can I have some money? Things like that.
Have we gotten to the point now where Harvard has more notable convicts than presidents?
That's a good question.
Ted Kaczynski, whichever guy led Michael Kendricks astray.
Yeah.
It's getting bad. They're
catching up.
Yeah.
He basically just trusted a Harvard graduate who was an employee at Goldman Sachs, which I would do the same thing.
I did wonder what people at Harvard think when they hear this. Like, the PR people at Harvard, you take a hit, right? Whenever somebody from – or is it just, hey, all publicity is good publicity?
Well, here's what I think. I think every school has its rapscallions.
Yeah.
And I think if any right-thinking person knows that, you don't put that on Harvard. If I'm Harvard, I'm like, God, these guys just blindly – our kids are so smart, they just blindly trust us with their money.
Blind allegiance.
Blind faith.
Those people out there, the peasants out there, will do whatever we say. I thought that was an interesting scene, just because Greg Williams has this – I think a balance between being the hard ass who really wants everybody to know he's the hard ass, but you do see little glimmers here and there of the human side of him, and it annoys me that I've seen a human side, because I really want to just look at him like some Disney movie villain that's all bad.
Yeah, I didn't think it existed either, Greg Williams. And Todd Haley, I'm actually liking Todd Haley this year too. Like, I didn't want to like Todd Haley either. To me, that was – going into Hard Knocks, that to me was going to be one of the most fun angles. Was these are two of the, on the outside at least, looking in, two of the least likable coordinators in the league. We'd seen Williams act on Hard Knocks once already. Haley may have been on it at one point as a coordinator. I don't even know if when the Chiefs were on it, if he was the head coach. I can't remember. But Haley, even with all his like stupid Carl Nassib stuff, like Haley seems like while he's a curmudgeon, and Jarvis Landry would probably disagree with what I'm saying, that rookie talent show, I thought, that showed that as long as these guys all have the ability to laugh at themselves, it humanizes them a little bit.
Yeah, and that's kind of something for coaches that they have to go through every year. If you're going to do a rookie show, you're probably going to get made fun of. We used to have just very few restrictions, and one thing that they might say is, hey, this coach gets pretty sensitive about his divorce. or, hey, this coach – maybe don't mention anything about his hair or hairpiece or something like that.
So
but other than that, it's pretty much no holds barred.
Yeah.
I got a lot of cred with the vets when I was a rookie, because I went into Coughlin pretty hard.
You did?
Yeah, I did a Coughlin impression, and I made a joke about how Clyde Simmons actually sets the practice schedule and all this other stuff.
Wow.
You know what I did was I did the Alec Baldwin speech from Malice, where he says, "You ask if I have a God complex, I am God," except that I did that in Tom Coughlin's voice.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So how did he react to it?
He was good. He's all red-faced like he gets.
And he's always red-faced.
Yeah, and he gave me a hard time about it afterwards, saying that, like, because I'd taken a couple of his speeches verbatim. So he said, "So what are you taking notes during my meeting? That's good."
Yeah, he's turning it on. Yeah, he's turning it around like it's a good thing. But was he laughing while you were doing it?
I think so. I looked up I can't remember if I was afraid to look at him or not.
Because that's the organic reaction.
Yeah.
However he's reacting in the moment of seeing it, that's what his emotion is.
You have to laugh. Because did you ever see the footage of the White House correspondent dinner where Obama went after Trump? And Trump,
no.
You know, Trump of all people probably doesn't have an awesome sense of humor about himself
there.
In that situation
yeah.
where he's getting made fun
yeah,
of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Trump had been going in on him on the birth certificate stuff forever.
Yeah.
So Obama gets up at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and I think this was after Obama had released his official birth certificate. But anyway, Obama goes into him, and you see Trump, and he's giving that laugh where you're like, yep, this is – what you do, you got to laugh when people are looking at you. Yeah, that's an apolitical take. I've been in the situation where I've been getting roasted, and usually you're going along with it. And somebody, then they hit a nerve, and you're like, yep, I gotta really smile here.
Dude, I'm not lying. Like, I don't know that – I don't know where I am in the pecking order in the 6'10 family to where this is even a consideration. But every year when the roast comes, I'm thinking to myself, like, please don't let it be me. Like I don't think I would handle a roast very well.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you'd handle it pretty well until got to the one or two things.
That's the thing. I think the one or two things. But that's like when you're getting roasted, you've got to pitch a perfect game, don't you? I mean, you can't show like you can't internalize anything.
You can't all of a sudden get sensitive.
Yeah.
Because then it gets really uncomfortable for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Once it gets a little too personal, then
I think I would make it through just fine. I just like, I'm one of those people, like, I don't like hearing bad things about me. It's why, like, I turn my notifications on Twitter off sometimes.
So the Rookie Show, though, was a pretty good one. And I think they had the help of the Hard Knocks producers. That's the only thing I can guess. Because they did satires of Jarvis Landry's speech.
I will ask that when Ken Rogers comes on the Triple Threat on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
I'll ask, do you guys, when you watch the Rookie skits, is that the first time you're hearing about any of this, or do any of them ever come to you asking about material?
That's the first time I've ever seen anybody do that much heavily edited. And the guys that did, the rookies that did the Jarvis Landry speech were just awesome.
That was incredible. I thought Baker Mayfield continues to be a gigantic green arrow up on Hard Knocks. I thought he was kind of a mashed potato in the first episode.
Yeah.
And that he was embracing the word buddy boy as much as he was.
Because he's making fun of, right. He's
Dorsey.
Doing an impression of John Dorsey.
Yes.
He's chewing massive amounts of gum.
And saying buddy boy like every five words.
It is good for him because you had pointed out, okay, is he as charismatic as maybe people thought?
Yeah.
It's really cool to see the guy who's untouchable. He's the number one overall pick. That he goes after the untouchable guy.
Yeah.
That he's doing John Dorsey because John Dorsey can't do a thing about it.
Right.
And it's cool to see that because, like, he's kind of doing what no other rookie would really be in his right mind to do.
He's the only one who could do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now that I'm
maybe Antonio Callaway, who can seemingly get away with anything.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking back on it, maybe I really shouldn't have taken on Coughlin. I can't believe
fourth,
you gave me.
What were you, a fourth round pick?
I was a fourth round
pick. Some balls.
I did. I had enough of a just like, life is short. What are you going to do? I like the guys in this room. I want to get their respect.
I bet you got the respect of the other players, though.
I did. I remember Tony Brackens congratulating me on raising the bar.
Yeah.
And I went after our defensive line coach too. The Kajust, we got to talk about this Kajust, because I want to like Kajust. He seems like a good flaky kid. I don't think he's got any chance in hell at making the team.
I don't know enough about their tight end situation, except that they love Njoku, who I love, and it was Fells, number 88, who was teaching Kajust all the blocking techniques, which still amazes me that NFL players, and I know more of them do it than don't, help young guys who are coming after their jobs.
Right.
Like, Fells is trying to make the team as a tight end, and so is Kajust, and he's there like, what you want to do is you want to get low, and then, you know, he's teaching him
how to use his hips and his legs.
To get some burst, get into his blocks. So
it shows you, too, how amazing it is that these tight ends come up through college without any emphasis on blocking at all.
Kajust looks
so out of sorts trying to learn how to actually use his legs when he's blocking.
Especially because he's a Stanford guy, which is a pro-style offense.
Right.
You know, where you think – although if I remember correctly, I'd have to go back and look, because he – I think I said this on a previous Deceptively Fast – is – he tore up Notre Dame his last year there, which is my school, so I watched it. He may have been a big wide receiver at Stanford who they're turning into a tight end now.
So Kajust might have a shot at making this team. I might be completely wrong. I almost just look at it because the way they're presenting him, he's so innocent about everything.
He's so
wide-eyed.
I felt like at the end, though, they were kind of alluding to him as if he's like as if they feel like he's got a decent chance of making the team. I don't know enough about their depth chart to know.
They got into the real flaky side of him. I say flaky. Like, look, I'm into new age kind of, not the spiritual side of things, but meditation and all that myself.
Yeah.
But when he looks up at the full moon, he says, "Hey, full moon, we can pull some energy from that."
Yeah,
and
then
he gets down on his knee and he's talking to Baker Mayfield and he says, "Hey, you're a leader, buddy.
Yeah.
People listen to you." It felt like a Stuart Smalley moment.
It did.
And then
it
he
did.
Goes to his box of crystals.
The crystals were crazy.
It's not like he's just got a crystal or two. He's got an assortment of crystals. He's like the drug dealer of crystals.
No.
He's got them in a cigar box. He's explaining like what this kind of kush is going to do for you.
It's like going to a mixology class.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like you were the, you know, you go to a bartender, you ask any bartender, I live with a bartender, Amy bartends, you ask her, if you listed 30 drinks, she'd be able to tell you every ingredient that goes into all 30 of them. That's what I felt like. I was watching somebody who had the recipe for each of those crystals. It was crazy.
I haven't gone in and like watched the second half of Cleveland Browns games to really watch Devin Cajuste and see what he looks like. Maybe now I have to.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be surprised if he makes the team.
Somebody you want to root for. You never know.
He almost seems like the classic, the producers talk to the coaches. Give me a guy that's on the bubble or really likable or has some personality and but maybe he doesn't have a chance of making it. We need some heartache in this story.
Okay, so based on Hard Knocks, who has a better chance of making the team? Just based on what you've seen on Hard Knocks, Devin Cajuste or Nate Orchard?
Oh, that's a really good question because they've shown Nate Orchard's kids and they're adorable and his wife seems really nice.
And they've shown Nate Orchard failing a lot more than they've shown Cajuste.
They've showed him failing. They've almost set him up to be like, oh, he's definitely getting cut.
Yeah.
Where I wonder if... And I don't know how much thought they put into all of this or how much they care. They follow the stories they follow. But I wonder if he's the surprise that you feel really good about because, man, he's got a young family he's got to take care of.
A lot of kids.
Yeah.
In the very last scene, the preview for next week, they show Nate Orchard, like, holding up his infant with one hand, like, above his head.
Yeah. I'm going to feel bad for Nate Orchard. I feel like if Devin Cajuste gets cut – it's just going to be, you know, like, I'm going to go camping in Colorado and get this out of my mind, and I'll work out in a field somewhere up there until I get the call.
Yeah, and we don't know anything about Orchard. At least I can't remember anything on the background of Orchard, like family background, but I feel like Cajuste has a dad who was able to, like, on a moment's notice, fly to Cleveland just to be with his son.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's probably a decent chance that there's a little bit of, you know, not like maybe FU money in the Cajuste family, but like if Cajuste needs to sleep in his parents' basement for like a couple of months while he's working out back in New York.
His dad, he does have those young kids though too.
Were
those Cajuste's little sisters in that first episode?
Yeah, that were in the crowd at the game. Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know who they were. They never really made it clear.
If they're Devin Cajuste's dad's kids, I think Devin Cajuste might have a little bit of the upbringing I did, which is he got a dad that's he's a man of the... He's a man of the universe. He's at about, you know, like, there's too much of him to be held down by one life. I had a similar father. So I've got sisters that are anywhere from, at this point, I don't know, I'm like 20 years older than my youngest sister.
Really?
Yeah, from several different women.
Yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
Just, he's
I hear you.
Yeah, there's too much of my dad for one woman.
You and Cajuste need to do a podcast with each other.
Yeah.
I feel like he would be a pretty easy get if he gets cut by the Browns.
I feel like Cajuste would be an easy interview
and
to get.
And he's deceptively fast as well.
I think he needs somebody to look over him too. Yeah. I worry that he would be taken in by like a Michael Kendricks investment scam or
something. No, totally. He's way too reliant on things like crystals.
Like Carl Nassib's going to sell him a mutual fund.
Yes. Nassib's setting him up.
10% every single year.
Nassib's setting him up.
Carl Madoff Nassib.
If we don't get Carl Nassib's take on the Michael Kendricks insider trading thing, then Hard Knocks has failed as a show.
I can't stop thinking about the fact that Carl Nassib said 10% every single year.
Every year.
I need him to understand that, no, if you're in the market for 50 years, you're going to have a couple bad years. That's not ever, just understand that.
If you
keep your money in there, you're fine
right.
If you don't touch it.
No, he's like 2 for 2 so far.
Right, yeah, exactly.
He's done it twice.
He's been nothing but like one of the most brilliant bull markets we've ever had.
Right, right.
I don't want to belabor this point too much. I know I've brought it up already, but
no.
I fear for Carl Nassib.
No, he needs to talk to someone like over the age of 30.
Well, because they start talking about whether or not Carl Nassib's going to make the team, and I started thinking about Carl Nassib. Like, it's cool that you've set aside this money and you know it's going to multiply into something else. But really, sometimes when you're young and you're just fresh in the market, you really don't understand that it needs to be the money that you're not going to touch for the next 30 or 40 yeah. years. That's the money that gets the 10% over time.
That's right.
The money that you might need 5 years from now as you're finishing your MBA or something, like, you need to be sure that's in something safer than your aggressive stock fund.
Amen. But
but you believe, man. You got so many people filling your head telling you about the stock
yeah.
market.
Yeah.
Antonio Callaway, my wife pointed this out.
Okay.
And I'm glad she did. I wouldn't have caught on to it. At the beginning of the episode, you see him kind of getting some guff from Todd Haley because he's injured. And
yeah.
Todd Haley calls him, he's a sports car because you get a little minor repair and you can't use it for 2 weeks. Let's recall, Antonio Callaway was the guy that they kept in for an entire game
yeah.
because Hugh Jackson wanted to teach him a lesson, and now he's injured.
Well, and it's also Todd Haley out there, like, knowing that the cameras are on, probably, knowing he has a microphone on. And what was Todd Haley's point in episode one of Hard Knocks to Hugh Jackson? These guys need to practice.
Yeah.
We need to have them out here. So I feel like it's also one of those things where he's making – it's another way he can get out his point about players – resting and being coddled and being soft. Like, he's going to get that point out there every chance he gets because that's part of his platform.
That's his
he's
thing.
He's politicking.
Is that, yeah, these guys need to be tougher.
Yeah.
Boy, there's so many guys trying to pass themselves off as so tough in this episode or this series.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I've ever remembered this many guys. The Mike Smith Atlanta Falcons edition, their whole theme of camp was, like, be tougher, be grittier, be all this. And that felt a little weird because I know Mike Smith. Mike Smith's an awesome guy.
Yeah.
I just knew him from watching his defenses, and then I was in training camp with him for like 2 weeks. But he's not like a Greg Williams, you know? Like,
no.
That's not his thing. So it always felt weird that they were trying so hard to push that with the Falcons. This, though, seems more like a bunch of individuals trying to set themselves out as the tough guy.
Well, and Hugh Jackson, with all the rhetoric about we got to be tough and trust me, he said trust me every episode so far at some point.
Yeah.
Where he's explaining something to the team. And I don't know, just like the human nature in me, if I had some guy up there saying trust me who'd just gone 1-31, who was able to win one football game in a league where horrific teams win 3 or 4 football games a year, he's won one out of his last 32, I would have a hard time trusting that guy with anything that he's up there preaching,
yeah.
you know?
And he starts off this episode controlling the music. And this is, again, we see all these fissures between Hugh Jackson and his coaches. Greg Williams criticized a player this week for tackling poorly. Calls it what's he say? He calls him stupid, or he said to use some.
I don't remember.
Wasn't very nice.
Yeah.
Whatever. It was in play. It was Greg Williams. Yeah. And Hugh Jackson criticized Greg Williams publicly for using that language. But then Hugh Jackson picks that smooth jazz music
yeah.
that Myles Garrett wants. They put it in, and it is like you're watching these guys work out to this music, and you want to fall asleep.
Right.
But then Bob Wiley, the offensive line coach, who is trying real hard to be more of a curmudgeon than he actually is. I refuse to believe that this guy actually gives a damn. He starts screaming about turning the music off. Like, dude, the head coach just put that music in.
Yeah.
The head coach is controlling it and everything, and you're screaming to turn the music off. Nobody's got any respect for Hugh Jackson. That's the impression I get. I don't
yeah.
know if it's true or not,
yeah.
but that's the impression I get.
Yeah, but he's so soft and forgiving on everything.
Yeah.
The way they handle Antonio Callaway, the way he's coming up and being – have you seen him be really hard on anybody so far this season?
Not even any – even when he's given tough love with Baker Mayfield, it's more of a suggestion. It's like, hey.
And then a pat on the ass. Well, and then when Baker Mayfield finally – because I know what you're talking about. In the first episode, he's like, so what time do you come in
yeah.
every day? And then this is Baker's first training camp, and Baker's basically explaining he's not a real morning person. And Hugh Jackson, like you just said, Seth, mildly suggests he should become one. And then when he finally does come in, you know, and now Baker Mayfield, his credit starts coming in at 5 or 6 in the morning, and there's Hugh Jackson's, he's celebrating like you know, like when a little kid puts a puzzle together, and you're like, yay, good job, Baker, yay, you made it in early. He's just, I don't know that it's the type of coach that you need for a team that just went 1-31, and it's the guy who just went 1-31.
That's the hard thing, though, is there's an old saying that, like, if you're the evil king, or if you're the mean king
yeah.
that all of a sudden relaxes and becomes nice, then people will love you for
yeah.
it. If you're the pushover king that all of a sudden decides to become vicious or tough,
yeah,
they'll think you're insane.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Hugh Jackson doesn't come off as insane, but I think he knows the limits of exactly what he can try to demand out of these people. Bob Wiley also, I'm starting to wonder if I should really look at him as an expert on history.
Why did he say?
Well, for one, he had his whole World War II analogy last week, which didn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And then this episode, he claims that the human body hasn't changed in the last 200,000 years. I don't know if he is doing that for exaggeration, but that's patently false. I'd love to take him to a museum. I'd like to have him look at suits of armor from the 1600s. I would love to talk to Bob Wiley.
I just love
about
that
this.
The guy with that body has any sort of opinion on the human
all
body.
The physiology
that
and everything.
Me. That entertains me.
The Baker Mayfield underwear ad that Hugh Jackson put up in
front.
That
was a good rib, yeah.
What do you think about Baker Mayfield and his being out there so much? Like, he's not afraid of ad campaigns, social media, all of that, compared to somebody like Peyton Manning or some of these other quarterbacks that didn't do any advertisements at all their rookie year. They went on and did a whole bunch more after that.
Yeah, I don't have a huge issue with it. You know, nowadays, especially rookie contracts, you know, the guys, you know, Peyton Manning, high draft picks from before 2011, they were getting handed, you know, money at the time that was like veteran money. Like,
right.
You know, they were getting handed money like that Matt Ryan's
making. Yeah, it was a
now.
Franchise killer.
Yeah,
that's
why there's a rookie wage kill, because Sam Bradford got the same contract that, you know, I don't know who would have been back in 2010 when he got drafted, you know, whoever it was back then.
But, yeah, no, and Jamarcus Russell is the guy that also just kills the franchise.
So, and Baker Mayfield's making life-changing money, don't get me wrong. He's guaranteed like $25 or $28 million, whatever it is. But I don't have a huge problem with it if they can handle it. Baker strikes me as a guy who's going to be able to handle it. He handles everything good-naturedly that comes his way. He's a two-time walk-on. I think some of it, Seth, has to do with their background. I don't think it's a blanket thing where you can go, well – I don't think any of these rookies should be able to do that. I think certain guys are able to compartmentalize and handle things. And if I'm looking at the background on a guy like Baker Mayfield, who was a walk-on twice, at one school he's a walk-on, then he has the confidence to go walk-on at Oklahoma, win the job, go win the Heisman. He's been successful at everything he's done since he touched the football at the collegiate level. I think he'll be fine. Doesn't take up a ton of time. I think if he sucks, that picture's going to come back to haunt him. But whatever,
he doesn't care anyway.
No, he knows that.
That hit that they showed on him in the preseason game was a really good depiction of how brutal it is playing quarterback.
Yeah,
I felt that one, and it didn't look like one that on the television probably looked all that bad, but because they had sound on it and they were at field level, he just got hit kind of awkwardly in the leg. That looked rough.
It's such Russian roulette, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
right, that hit easily could have been the one that broke his femur or something.
Yeah, or, you know, he takes a hit to the torso and it ruptures his spleen. Like, you just – even like in the Texans game last week when Deshaun had that play where he threw the interception – he took a shot from Ndamukong Suh where he fell backwards. He kind of landed on both his hands. You could break a wrist, breaking your fall. I hate the preseason, man.
Yeah.
I
just, Tyrod Taylor had that awful, awful looking injury.
Yeah,
and then it turns out it was just a dislocated pinky.
Yeah, like it looked, the way he was running off the field, it looked like you were going to have to amputate his hand.
I know.
It looked like a fake hand. It looked like a Jamie Lannister hand.
And the way he was screaming in the tent.
That
wasn't easy to hear either.
Yeah.
It was. I wish I didn't know that the injury wasn't that severe. Like, my wife was watching, and she didn't know that it – no, she did know at that point that it hadn't been, because she was watching the game. When that Browns game was going on last week, I'm sitting in my car just checking in on Twitter, looking at things, and I look at Twitter – and basically, in my mind, I assume that Tyrod Taylor is probably out for the year or something.
Oh, you get the Twitter react to the
injury? Because I see people saying,
oh, my gosh,
that's the worst hit I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Oh, he's going to lose a hand.
And then he's back in.
I come back a half hour later, and my wife was like, oh, Tyrod's back in.
Yeah.
Like, no, what the hell are you talking about?
They gave
about?
Him a new hand.
Yeah. What other – you have any other notes from this episode?
Let me see what else I have on this episode. I think we hit most of what I had. I hope they're setting up for a big finale, because this was the most kind of regular episode of all of them. We got a glimpse of Josh Gordon at the beginning of
it. Yes, Josh Gordon and Myles Garrett have the physiques that I'm most jealous of. as an adult man looking at Miles Garrett is a freak, and this is a known thing, and Josh Gordon's a physiological freak too. But to see those guys just kind of it's not like they've been dehydrating themselves for a photo shoot or anything.
No, that's how they look.
They weren't dieting all day yesterday. Like, that's just how they wake up every morning.
Well, and Garrett is one thing, because we know that Garrett has been on the straight and narrow for his entire career.
Right.
Like, the guy's a maniac. He was the number one overall pick. Like, Josh Gordon has probably put his body through hell and back a couple of times. And yet there he sits at his locker and he's just yoked. He's, you know, he's thumbing through his iPad there looking at the plays. I'm like, oh my God, this guy is a beast.
Right. He probably has just been working out whatever he was doing, wherever he went during training camp.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then for a few weeks where the Browns trainers, or a week or so with the Browns trainers. And that's what he steps out of the apartment in the morning looking like.
I wanted to see more of Josh Gordon. I was a little disappointed in that. But I know there's not much to show because he's just hanging around right now. He's not practicing. But,
and I'm not sure he's got all that electric a personality.
Maybe not.
Have you ever seen that of him? I don't think
I don't know much about his personality.
Yeah, like, I don't know if there's a lot to show there other than him saying hi to people.
Maybe not. The other thing I had down, we hadn't talked, Jarvis Landry. You know, we talked a couple of episodes ago about how Todd Haley was kind of guilting Jarvis Landry into being a mentor for Antonio Callaway. We had a scene of him mentoring Antonio Callaway at one point, so Jarvis Landry has obviously at least somewhat embraced that.
But also getting a lot of crap from Haley for not running his routes out hard during the preseason game.
Yeah, big time.
And I don't know what to make of that. If I'm Jarvis Landry, you're setting up this whole – again, he's one of these guys that's trying to come off real tough and hard in this, and now he's getting lambasted as a guy that makes it look like – they made him look – like a lazy professional football player in that scene. Yeah, and I don't know if that was fair. The one route, I watched it back a couple times.
He had no chance.
That's what I thought, and I thought by the time he looked back, he could see that the ball was going way out of bounds. And I just wonder, I wish I could have seen the other routes that Todd Haley was angry about better.
And do you really want Jarvis Landry laying out for balls in the preseason
that are impossible to catch?
Yeah, like, you, I mean, honestly, that's what you're looking at. You're looking to have him go full ribcage exposed, stretching, landing on the hard ground, stretching out for a ball in a 5-0 game against the Eagles.
And that's one thing that I would be careful about if I'm Todd Haley, because sometimes coaches, to set the tone and show that, you know, nobody's safe or that everybody should be open to criticism, you'll tear into the guy that's the leader in the group, just like Belichick tears into Brady. But it's one thing to tear into a guy for performance. It's another to question a guy's effort.
Yeah.
Because that's almost like a character indictment more than anything else. And I get really unless Jarvis Landry genuinely was slacking on those routes, I'd be real careful about that.
Yeah, That's interesting. My other takeaway was just they're going to have a hell of a receiving corps if Josh Gordon is right.
Right.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. If Antonio Callaway is right.
Right. I mean, their front three wide receivers are going to be Josh Gordon, Jarvis Landry, and Antonio Callaway. That's a pretty good front three receiving corps. If you get the Josh Gordon, if you get Pro Bowl level Josh Gordon, that's a pretty sporty receiving core.
And
you add in Njoku as the tight end there. And
Duke Johnson
out of the backfield.
They've got Carlos Hyde. Yeah, they've got some speed. They've got some just raw athleticism.
They've got old linemen they've invested in.
Yeah, and that's where Jarvis Landry, too, can be really valuable if he has somebody that does have that genuine take-the-top-off-a-defense speed.
I'm starting to talk myself into the Browns winning, like, seven games.
Yeah, that's what I did last year. What am I going to do again?
With the Browns?
I don't know if I talked him into – I talked him into a respectable season. Like, I thought 4, 5, 6 wins at least. That's a respectable
losing. I
don't
remember who their quarterback even was. Oh, it was DeShone Kizer.
Yeah. Well, and DeShone Kizer, again, another guy that – Is Hugh Jackson all he's cracked up to be as he's, like, selling out the guy that they drafted knowing from their college, his college coach, that he wasn't ready for the NFL, and then putting all that pressure on him and basically blaming him for his lack of success when you knew what you were getting into with this guy?
Yeah, I think, like, at some point the talent level trumps at least some of Hugh Jackson's ineptitude.
Yeah.
And I don't think it trumps it to the point where they're going to compete for a playoff spot. But just rattling off all those names on the offensive side of the ball, there's some good players. And Tyrod Taylor is a decent quarterback. The one thing he does is he protects the football really well.
He could be in the vein of a Tim Tebow, some of these guys that, as long as you don't turn the ball over, you can help your team win.
Yeah.
If you have a good defense and you have a rushing attack, then sometimes just simply not turning the ball over is underrated.
They got to the playoffs in Buffalo with that formula last year.
Right.
With Tyrod Taylor.
So you can win. You can have respectability with Tyrod Taylor. It's always the question of like, okay, but is he going to limit you? Is he not going to take you
over
the top?
All I care is that they get over 5.5 wins.
So
that'll be respectable to me.
That's a respectable losing season and not getting blown
it's
out.
It's a winning
routinely.
Losing season.
Right.
For some.
Well, that's what they had last year. Yeah. Well, I mean, you could argue that. They played a bunch of close games last year. I don't know.
I'm just talking about needing the over.
Very cavalier. I'm going to say this before I say anything else. I was completely wrong about how I thought I was going to feel about Kristen Cavallari.
Yes.
I came into this series very much thinking, okay, this is some Hollywood self-absorbed woman who married Jay Cutler because he's Jay Cutler.
I like her.
And I thought because of the shows she was on, I just kind of thought she was going to be that kind of a person. I respect her.
Yeah.
And this is the delicate balancing act she pulls off. She's in a business where her career is like her. She is the sole focus of her career, and she needs to be concerned about her brand. You know, her jewelry line is her brand. Her cooking book is her brand. All of those things, it's all about her. And yet, she never really comes off as unhealthily self-absorbed.
Mm-mm.
It feels very much like she understands the business, and she knows she has to publicize herself and everything, but it's not like wrapped up in her whole identity.
No, I think she's pretty balanced too.
Yeah.
I think she makes time for her family and she makes time for her husband and she makes time to do the extra stuff like flying to New York for award shows and interviews and doing the interview circuit and publicizing. I find her to be really balanced,
mm-hmm.
And to be very organized. I said at the beginning of the season, I don't know that she's got a real great nose for talent yet for her business, and I stand by that. And I think that kind of came to the surface in this last episode where she had to lay into her staff. I felt very vindicated watching her give the what for to Shannon and to Brittany and all these others on her. The only one that's immune is Reagan because she's dumb blonde
she what
who sits
she
at the
is.
Reception desk.
You
yeah.
find out that she's overpaid for what she does.
Right, which and she probably, realizes it.
Yeah, and she knows it.
She's just around because she's probably fun to have around.
She's a likable bimbo.
Yeah.
Like, she's fun and people like her. She's good for the corporate culture.
And she makes everybody feel smarter.
Yeah.
I think that too, you know.
So sometimes you got to have somebody that can do the grunt work that knows that they're there for the grunt work.
Yeah, so I still don't think she's got a great nose for surrounding herself with great people, but her business will... her business will thrive because of this show.
She's learned that
it's
lesson.
At least a tour stop when people go to Nashville.
There's nothing worse than when people want to give you money and you're not taking it because you can't take the money because you have incompetent people. Like, have you ever been somewhere and you're like, I just want to buy this item.
Yeah.
Stop selling me.
Yep.
Like, just take my money. I want to take this. And like, the business does everything it can to mess it up. This is what happens. We talked about this earlier, but it got even worse. Shannon, the social media person, has some hand in order fulfillment.
Yeah.
Which was an issue earlier with, we saw it when they were actually packing the things by hand. But now it turns into Shannon's responsible for social media and your e-commerce website
right.
to where or people are unable to make orders after from the email that was sent out.
That's what it was. She has a newsletter. As part of her duty, she sends out a newsletter to whoever's on their mailing list, and there was to be a link in the newsletter where you click to buy what was like a new line of product. Like
right.
it was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
It was a big deal. And she didn't put the hyperlink in there, I guess, where the logo was. And her excuse was, I didn't know what the link was.
No, but her excuse was even better. Her explanation was, well, I was really, really drunk on tequila, and I set my alarm for 2 a.m. so I could get up and do this. If you're drunk on tequila at, what, 11 p.m.?
Yeah.
You thought that at 2 a.m. somehow you're going to pull it off?
That Kristen Cavallari didn't fire somebody this season is a travesty. Like, she does not have a great staff.
I have a feeling that Shannon's probably really good at social media and just what you know. The person that's really good at
23.
And the person that's really good at social media almost is a biological law is not good at the administrative stuff, and you shouldn't have them in charge of the administrative stuff. I thought that Jay was really good at the party, at the launch party. I was impressed with Jay. I think Jay's shown in these last couple episodes that he's actually somewhat adept in social situations, even though you think he's going to be a complete mess.
Yeah.
But he pressured Kristen into making a speech, even though she really didn't want to. But it was the right thing for him to do, to pressure her into giving the speech. And now I can't remember. Did she actually give the speech?
She did.
She got up and got very emotional.
Yeah, she thanked some people and things like that. I think Jay Cutler wants people to think that he's a certain way.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he's actually a pretty decent guy.
It's disarming if all of a sudden you see, oh, wow, this guy's actually kind of charming and everything, and I can have a conversation
with
him.
He's a very good corporate kind of husband, too. You know, they like CEOs and, you know, captains of industry and politicians, they talk about having a good wife.
Yeah.
You know, she's a good wife for him because she presents herself well. She's, you know, she's socially adept. She can have conversations. She's easy to have around. She can be off doing her thing while he's off doing his thing. Just kind of flipping it gender-wise, I feel like Jay, surprisingly, is pretty decent at that stuff. I feel like he's very supportive of Kristen.
Right.
When things are going poorly, he needles her but gives her pep talks. He, like you just said, Seth, he was good in that situation of the opening to her store. So,
Were you surprised that she was as nervous as she was about giving a speech?
A little bit because, yeah, she's a very public and out there and, kind of a
it's interesting,
saucy,
though,
outgoing kind of social figure.
Well, you and I both speak for a living.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that going from one audience or one environment to another, how much of a difference it is. How much all of a sudden you realize, like, oh, wait, I speak 4 hours a day, but this is a completely different setting and it's a different set of challenges.
Yeah, I just thought – I was surprised only because she's been in a lot of different situations.
Like, right.
She does the red carpet at the Oscars or the Emmys, whatever it is. She's been on reality TV. She's doing this show. She's probably done a ton of radio in her time.
Yeah.
So she's done all these different things. So I just figured she's been so good at all those other things, she'd be good at that. I heard you guys this morning, Mike, talking about Mark Vandermeer was emceeing the Texans luncheon yesterday.
Right.
And
which is an easy emceeing gig. Mark's awesome at emceeing.
He's great.
Like, as emceeing gigs go, that's not a more receptive audience than a bunch of people who paid money to come watch a football coach talk.
Right. You know? But I heard Mike say that he would be really nervous or he'd be a disaster or whatever Mike always says about himself self-deprecatingly in that situation. And my thought was, no, you wouldn't. You'd be fine. I think, even though it's very, very different. I think, too, I emcee things sometimes, as do you. It is different when the live audience is sitting there looking at you.
Yeah.
Versus us just sitting here with microphones talking.
Right. Oh, it's a whole different dynamic. And I know Rich Lord, your co-host, gets very nervous about public speaking.
Yes.
And I guess, what's your least favorite version of public speaking? Because you speak in front of crowds pretty comfortably.
I do. Emceeing. Mine. Okay. Honestly.
Yeah.
It's kids.
Oh, yeah,
like
that's
when
tough.
You go to speak at junior high.
Junior high.
Yeah.
Elementary school kids are awesome. You just got to talk about your cat for 10 minutes and they're
yeah,
happy.
That's it sounds weird to say, but junior high kids, because I go to junior high sometimes. Like, there's teachers in our audience or teachers that listen to the show. And they're like, oh, would you – they have a career day or whatever. I've gone into a ton of career days and spoken. And that's the hardest audience probably is because they're being forced to kind of listen to you. Maybe
a third of
them are interested in what you're saying, and teenagers have no filter when it comes to hiding their disgust with having to sit in a classroom.
And a larger percentage of that crowd too is like has it in for you, just because that's what they are.
That's what they like. Yeah,
they're rebelling, or this is an authority figure up here, or this guy's lame, or
emceeing at a luncheon or a charity dinner is not hard because people are paying to be there,
and they're very polite.
They
too.
Are.
You're kind of it's a crowd of business people and whatnot that have to act with a certain degree of comport. They have to comport themselves regularly.
I think, honestly, a lot of them would like to do what we do for a living as well, even though a lot of them probably make a lot more money than we do.
Yeah.
I think if we're at a Texans thing or it's a charity event that's somehow tied to a sponsor of the station or whatever, just by accident, half the people there are going to know who we are, what we do. They're going to be predisposed to liking us and laughing at us and things like that.
What's your chance. What's your public speaking tip for somebody? We'll leave our listeners with anybody that's nervous about giving a speech. What's your tip for giving a speech?
You mean like just like physically or in terms of
content? Yeah, just something for people that are trying to be better public speakers. Is there a lesson you've learned over the years?
I would say try to have something funny at the beginning of it just because if they laugh at it, this is just for me.
Yeah.
If I get a laugh at something, early on in a speech, it completely eases me for the rest of the speech, because it's laughing is a connection. If I have material in there, I would make sure I have something good at the beginning.
If you're not funny by nature, I would say at the very least tell a story.
Yeah,
and that's one thing I wish I had known earlier on, is just how much people love stories. And a lot of times you're trying to make a good grand point or show everybody how smart you are.
Yeah.
People just like stories.
Yeah.
And if they're out of their office and they get to hear a story, they're happy about that.
And stories can sometimes inherently be funny. You don't have to be a funny person in terms of your delivery, or you probably should be good in your delivery if you're up there.
Self-deprecation gets an easy
huge
laugh. Anytime you make fun of yourself,
yes,
because the audience, most people are good people, and they want to, if they can laugh at you as a way of making you feel better, they're going to give you that laugh.
I don't care if they're laughing at me or with me. As long as they're laughing, it tells me they're entertained and they like being there. So that's the biggest thing for me, where I get in a groove up there emceeing or talking, is when people laugh early on, because now I feel like I'm connected to the audience and they're vibing what I'm doing up here, that kind of thing.
I like I love these TED Talks, if you ever watch the version you guys did on the show with Ted Johnson. I like those. But the TED Talks that you see online from the technology, engineering, and design, is that what it is?
Yeah.
But they give these 15-minute speeches. The ones that seemingly kill the most are the ones that are about science or some interesting topic, but where it's tied in with a story of some sorts.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how dry the scientist is up there. If you tell a story and then tie that into your information, that's what people grasp
on. Can make unentertaining stuff entertaining.
All right, man. I appreciate it. I guess we're done with Very Cavallari.
Yeah.
We'll be done with Hard Knocks soon.
We'll be done with Hard Knocks next week.
What are we going to move after?
Do we want to do Last Chance U?
Let's do Last Chance U.
Okay,
we'll work our way through that.
Okay, we've got a couple weeks to do it.
Yeah, and then so I know at least a few of our listeners now have watched Very Cavallari because we were talking.
Okay, well that's good.
We'll get our royalties.
You're welcome,
from E Network. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Isn't there also a regular season?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.